Today we are faced with a challenge that has not faced Klal Yisrael for hundreds of years. Today we are faced with a challenge that even the Chassidim of the Alter Rebbe did not go through. These big Chassidim, Reb Hillel Paritcher, Shmuel Munkes, the Pinchas Reizes, all the Chassidim from the previous generations, the great Chassidim of the previous generations, who went on Mesiras Nefesh for Chassidus, who went on Mesiras Nefesh, and some gave up their lives al Kiddush Hashem to fulfill the Hirois of the Rabbeim, the tens of Tmimim that we don't even know their names, that were killed by the Soviet regime for spreading Yiddishkeit, for teaching Aleph Beis to younger children. They all faced hard times. But there's one challenge that even these great Chassidim did not face. And that challenge is raising your children to be Chassidim what they have never seen the Rebbe. Not only have they not seen the Rebbe because they pushed live out of town. There were Chassidim growing up in Israel and Russia that did not see the Rebbe. But at least they knew that if they traveled to New York, they would see the Rebbe. If they would come to 770, they would see the Rebbe. Every week they could get faxes of the new Sichas the Rebbe said. When they called 770 or faxed or sent a letter, they knew they would get an answer directly for their bar mitzvahs, for their births, for their chasanas. They knew there was somebody on the other end. Today we are raising a generation that's called the Menachem Mendel generation, which in a way it's very cute. You walk into a Lubavitch Masifta today, you say Mendel, and you could have 9 out of 12 kids turn around and say what? So that's a Geshmaka thing. It's like after Tavshim Emches, when it was called the Chayimushka class. You walk into Beis Rivka, and you say Chayimushka, everyone's like what? So we got the new names, the Mushkis and the Mukis and the Chayas. Everyone wanted to find their individual way of expressing themselves. And they made books, the Chayimushkas. And the Rebbe had a lot of nachas actually from the books. The presents they would give the Rebbe was books with pictures of Chassidim that named their girls Chayimushka. To the extent that there was actually a difference in the letters of the Rebbe to the ones that named their kids Chayimushka for the birth. That if the girl's name was Chayimushka, it wasn't Tichia, it was Tilita. It was like a Choshevah title that was reserved for Rabbonis. Because anyone that named Chana or Chayimushka got this special title because it was a personal nachas to the Rebbe. So on one hand, it's very gishmak. You have a bunch of Menachem Mendels, the name Menachem Shmoy, all over the classroom. But on the other hand, if the entire class that's sitting in front of me, 15, 16 years old, his name is Menachem Mendel, that itself is the biggest sign that we're in Golas that long. That you have Bochrim today whose name is Menachem Mendel. Not because they were named after the Tzemach Tzedek. So that means that we're raising a generation of Bochrim that it's not pshat that they were at a certain point in their life that they saw the Rebbe. And then there was this Helem Vehester. They're lechatchila born after the Helem Vehester. And if that's the case, what are we supposed to tell them when Gimel Tammuz is coming? How are we supposed to educate our children about the Rebbe in this post-Gimel Tammuz era? It is this question and this dilemma that I intend to address today in our classes that you will hear, Mirtza Hashem. I want to start with a story. Rabbi Simpson, who teaches here in the yeshiva, once went on Merkish Lichus. There's a rule by Merkish Lichus that if the person is interested, he's probably not Jewish. If you call up someone and he actually says, yes, I want to meet with you, there's a good chance that he's not Jewish. So, I had my own experiences. When I went on Merkez Shlichus to Tallahassee, Florida, so the first day we were on there on the route, calling people, no one said yes. We finally found the big lawyer, his name was David Simpson, thought there was a very Jewish name, and he said yes. He turned out to be some evangelical Christian that was preaching Bible and gospel to us as we walked through the door. It was a quick exit. But it's very hard, Merkez Shlichus, because you're not coming to a city where people know about a rabbi and Yiddishkeit. The whole point of Merkez Shlichus are the people that ran away from Yiddishkeit. They're living in Ekveld in some little hole, and it's dafka those people that you have to find and get to. And if that's the case, obviously the interest level is not very high. So, Rabbi Simpson and his friend went on Merkez Shlichus, and they finally get someone that's maskim to meet with them. So they tell each other that's probably that they're not Jewish. So they, sure enough, they show up to the house and have a 2-hour discussion, and it's very gishmak. In the middle, one, they're talking, and he asks the mother, so tell me a little bit of your history about your Judaism. She says, yeah, when I was 19, I met the Reform rabbi and I converted, and since then I've been Jewish. So his friend looks at him and they both wink to each other. Reform conversion, in other words, not Jewish. So they said, you know, let's quickly get out of here. We have other things to do with our time than spend time with Goyim. But they have to do nicely. So they asked the lady, so what made you decide to convert? Now, what made you interested in Yiddishkeit? So her answer startled them. She says, when I was a kid growing up, I knew that my mother was Jewish. So I figured if I'm Jewish, I might as well convert. It sounds funny. But really, there's two stages. There's being part of Chassidim, and then there's the stage which converts you into being a Chassid today. One is a culture thing. I'm a Chassid because my father was a Chassid. I'm a Chassid of my father's Rebbe. I'm a Chassid of my Zayde's Rebbe. You meet people today on Mitzrayim that they associate themselves with Lubavitch because their grandparents were Lubavitch or Chassidim. Right? Their grandparents were Lubavitch or Chassidim. It doesn't affect them today. Our goal in Chinuch is that our kids should be Chassidim. They should convert. What does it mean convert? That means I'm ready now to act different. As long as I'm just a Chassid by name, that does not make me follow, give up my tithes for Chassidus. Because I'm just a Chassid by name. If I am going to be converted, means I took the step and I said, I am not just a Chassid because my father is a Chassid. I am a Chassid because I decided to be a Chassid. When it's your decision, that is the time when you say, if I am deciding to be a Chassid, I know that that is going to come at a cost. That cost may be my tithes. That cost may be my sleep. That cost may be my comfort zone. That cost may be my life. But I am ready to do that because I decided to be a Chassid. So how is it that we are going to get our children not just to be Chassidim because the Rebbe was our Rebbe and they were born to us? Rather, what's going to cause them to take the step and to convert to Chassidishkeit in a way because it is theirs? That is the key that we're trying to figure out, how our kids today will agree by themselves to make that step. In the past, it was very easy. In the past, it was, you brought your kid to the Rebbe, he fell in love, so to speak, with the Rebbe, and he gave his life to the Rebbe. This is amazing. He saw the MS in front of his eyes. All you had to do is get him to 770 with a little bit seichel, he decided that this is where I want to go and continue. Today, that simple option is not there. In other words, today, we don't have begoli in an open way, the option, just dump your kid in 770, it's going to come out of chassid. It used to be that parents would come to Fabrengen and have their kids vagel in zich. They were just dreizich in 770. Parents knew that the more the kid hung out in 770, there's a bigger chance it'll be a chassid. Today, if a kid is dreizich and there's nothing going on, you don't know which circles he may end up with in. So in other words, today what was a guarantee 20 years ago is a big suffix today. So how are we supposed to get our children or talmidim or teenage boys and girls today to make consciously the decision that it's not just that I am a chassid chabad because six generations of chassidish blood are running in my genes, or because that's where my parents were and that's where they sent me, but that's because I want to do it. It's an age-old question. Really, this question goes back since Matan Torah. The Torah was given to our parents. How did the second generation Yidden, the Yidden that went into Eretz Yisrael, how did they get involved in Torah? How did they get involved? In other words, why didn't the second generation reject the Torah of the first generation and say, Hashem gave you the Torah, but not us. Therefore, you are excited about it, but not us. What was the key throughout all the generations that we enabled us to continue the chayis in Yiddishkeit? We're going to stop Siddishkeit a second and go to Yiddishkeit. What continues to give us a drive to have the same drive as the Yidden that were Mekabel the Torah? And the answer is very simple. Because we tell our children that you should know that the Torah was actually given to you. You were standing by Har Sinai. In other words, the mistake that you made and thought that the Torah was given to your great-grandfather and not to you, and you're just the fourth generation receiver from the Torah, is wrong. That mindset is wrong. You, together with your Eltazeda, were standing by Har Sinai together, and the Torah was given to you. The moment I hear that I received the Torah, well, if it was given to me, that forces me to react. It's no longer the Torah of my father, the Torah of my grandfather, the Torah of my great-grandfather. It's my Torah. The same is true with Yetzias Mitzrayim. We want our children to celebrate Pesach. There's two approaches. One approach is the standard approach. We're celebrating Jewish freedom in the historical way. We tell our children that you should know 2,000 years ago, Zayda Moshe was in Mitzrayim, and therefore Hashem took him out of Mitzrayim, and therefore we should celebrate Zayda Moshe's release from Mitzrayim. What's the problem with that mindset? I'll be honest with you. As a father, sometimes you think about which names you're going to name your child, right? Kid's going to be born, you plan, you're maybe going to have a boy, maybe going to have a girl, and you start thinking of names, what are you going to name your kid? Now, everyone has Zaydas and Bubbas that they want a name after. Grandparents on this side, grandparents on this side, great-grandparents. At a certain point, you could have an Eltazeda. Eltazeda was a very holy person, but you no longer care to name after him because I never knew him. You would feel closer to name after a grandfather who was a little bit less holy, but you knew him well, than this guy that you have to see your Zayda up there. Right? Because this is someone that you knew and you want to respect and you want to give a name after, and this is someone that you relate to. At a certain point, the generation comes up and they say, wait a minute. Tonight my friends are going to the basketball game. Big game tonight. World championship tonight. Big game. That's one option. Or we have Elta Zedas leaving Mitzrayim remembrance ritual. Option B. At a certain point, basketball outweighs Zeda Moshe's leaving Mitzrayim. Because I never knew the Zeda Moshe. You didn't know him. Even Zaydi didn't know Zeda Moshe. It's been so long. And therefore, I would love to attend if I had the time. If I had no other event planned for tonight, I would probably go to Zeda Moshe's thing. It's like the Shpola Zeda's Einoklach's reunion. People try to go for those that have the time, but those that have big meetings, they just let it go because Taka the Shpola Zeda was saved that day. That's very cute. But, you know, we have other plans for tonight. How do we stop that? How do we stop that? The only way to stop that is by reminding them that Ilu lehoitzi aviseinu b'mitzrayim hareyanu vaneinu mishubadim ayinu lefari b'mitzrayim. You have it all wrong. It's not pshat that if our Zaydas didn't leave Mitzrayim, they would be stuck in Mitzrayim. We would be stuck in Mitzrayim. Every once in a while on the internet, they come out with these new kid series. So on Chabad.org, they came out with a new series called What If? Which means one kid asks his sister, what if the Torah was given in the moon or not on the desert? Or one of the things is, what if we never left Mitzrayim? So the kid says, well, that would be great. We'd be visiting the pyramids. And we'd be, I don't know, hanging out with the Egyptians. And his friend says, wait a minute. If Zaydi didn't leave Mitzrayim, we would be slaves. Oh, no, it's terrible. We would be slaves. We better get out of Mitzrayim. That's the whole kid's thing back and forth. In other words, the moment we realize that Pesach is not about Zayda Moshe leaving Mitzrayim, as much as it is Gershon Abson leaving Mitzrayim, so then if I'm the one that left Mitzrayim, I'm going to celebrate because it's my celebration. The moment you take it away from Zaydi and you make it yours, that's when you become committed. So the key to commitment is by making it yours. It's the same old thing when it comes to fundraising. There's a famous story of a guy that he wanted to go fundraising from a big veer. The person that we're talking about, his name was Meir Shapiro. He founded the famous yeshiva called Chachmei Lublin. To enter that yeshiva, you have to know like 500 daf bal peh just to enter. It was a yeshiva for Ga'ine Ga'inim. He founded also the Daf Yomi cycle. It was a yeshiva for Lamdanim. He had a dormitory in that yeshiva. And what he wanted was that the Talmidim should be able to learn a lot by day and by night. Problem was, in his town, it got very cold in the summer, and there was no heat. So what did they have? They had like these ovens that they would heat up with wood. Problem number one arrived when wood cost money, and he didn't have money. So what happened was, the Talmidim were getting cold, and therefore they couldn't learn. You don't sleep at night, you don't learn by day. Old problem. Didn't start 5, 7, 6, 9. What happened was, he started fundraising for wood. So you had the local Balabatim in the city, that they were giving wood, they were doing stuff, and everything was nice. But at a certain point, they also ran out of money. There was one gvir in the city that was very respectful to Reb Meir Shapiro. The problem was that he was very cheap, and he refused to give donations to the yeshiva. It got to a point that Reb Meir Shapiro decided, Ad Kan. So what did he do? In the middle of the night, he knocks on his door. The guy comes out in his pajamas. He sees the Rebbe of the city, Rabbi Shapiro, standing by the door. He says, come in. So before he went in, he says, Nu, Reb Chaim, what's machstu? Baruch Hashem. How's your wife? Baruch Hashem. How's your kids? Baruch Hashem. How's your Zayda? Baruch Hashem. How's your Baba? Baruch Hashem. After 20 minutes of Baruch Hashem-ing, the guy is sitting with his thin pajamas, and he starts getting really cold. So he says, Reb Shloimeh, Reb Meir, time to go in, I'm getting cold. So he says, Noch 20 minutes, where's du kalt? A ganze Nacht, wie fühlt der Bochrim? 20 minutes, you can't stand outside. How do you think the Bochrim feel? He paid for the whole winter, the wood. The moment you start feeling the cold yourself, commitment is different. The moment it becomes your problem, you start committing. In other words, when we want our kids to commit, to go from the stage of being Jewish to converting to being Jewish, there has to be something that's going to schlep them over the line. And that line was always the Rebbe. So what are we going to do today? This is the struggle of today. You have many people that the way they answer this question is by telling their children stories of the Rebbe. It's very inspiring. On the other hand, it's actually demoralizing. Because when you hear a story of the Rebbe, and it's necessary to hear stories of the Rebbe, I don't want anyone to take from this that it's wrong. It's very important. On the other hand, the message to the child listening to the story is that the Rebbe was great. If only I lived 30 years ago like you, I would have experienced this greatness. You hear a story of a wonderful person that passed away. Imagine you read a biography of someone that just passed away, and he was a tzaddik nister. And you say, oh, if only I knew this then, I would have spent more time with this person. So I knew the greatness of this person, so either I should have lived then, but today I don't have it. So the story gives you pride in Lubavitch culture, but it really can't make you commit to be a Lubavitch today. There is only one way, and that way is to somehow get the message to your children that they have a Rebbe today. The moment the child gets that message, that the Rebbe is not his father's Rebbe, he is not dedicating his life to his grandfather's Rebbe, he is dedicating his life to his Rebbe, so then he will be ready to take the step and to do something for his Rebbe. So, in other words, we answered the question but actually made the problem bigger. The answer is simple, easy to say. Explain to their children that they have a Rebbe. But between me and you, how are you supposed to do that? How do you explain to your children that you have a Rebbe that they do not see? That even you could tell them to go to any place in the world, they won't see him. So what are you supposed to do? There are many people that try to answer this problem also. Group number one came along, and they said that I can prove you, based on siches, that there is a Rebbe. Which that is a good approach, but not enough. Because the Nefesh HaBahamis is very much alive in the world, and it's very hard to live with a Rebbe that's alive based on a book. It's inspiring to know that this may be true. But when I'm fighting with my Nefesh HaBahamis, and believe me, we all fight with it. Not only do we fight with it, the temptations of the world are just getting bigger. It's just getting flashy. I don't know where they're holding Flash 4 today, and 4D, and all these different types of things. Today, the tithes are extremely attractive. There's millions of dollars put into which industry? The advertising industry. And most advertising industry is targeting which age group? The teenage age group. Because that's the crazy age where kids will spend money and do something crazy. They want to have fun. So imagine your child is walking down the street and he has all these advertisements hitting him from all sides. Even if you don't have the shtusim of the internet or videos at home, which if you do have, you're basically handicapping your children. But even if you don't, and at least they have all their limbs, because they're not handicapped by their very parents which are trying to help them. The same parent which is trying to help his child is chopping off his hand. But besides that, just walking the streets, no matter which city you live, there's always advertisements and people talking and conversations and friends and culture. Just being in the subway, just eyes wandering on different posters. The world is out there. Today, you can have entire video havens and little things that fit into the size of your hand. Today it's out there. And then they have this Rebbe that's alive because that's what it says in the book. And you're going to argue with the Sikha? The Nevesh Bahanas is not really convinced. You know, it works. Maybe in the middle of a Fabringen. Or when you're in a good mood. But not when the Nevesh Bahanas is flying with fire. It has to be more tangible. The same way the Taivis are tangible, the Rebbe has to be accessible, tangible. So came another group of people, and they said, let's make the Rebbe very tangible. Let's make believe he's actually giving us things. Let's line up, and he'll give us Koishol Bracha. Let's line up, and he'll give us dollars. Let's make believe he's walking in. Let's make believe he's walking out. In a way, it has a certain good feeling to it. Because it makes it very tangible. Imagine, I'm walking away because the Rebbe just walked in. And I moved to the side because the Rebbe just left. And I pushed online because the Rebbe is speaking. And I got squashed online to get lekach. It sounds very good. And it actually makes you feel part of it. It's like being in a 4D movie theater. Which maybe as you're doing it, it makes it more real to you. But then what happens is, reality hits, and you're like, wait a minute, I'm watching a ghost. And the stupidity of it, and the embarrassment of being part of it, makes you run away from it as far as you can. It's like being in a cult. While you're in the group, and they have these group things, so everyone's excited, oh, let's guru this, and they guru that. They stay up all night, they do all these crazy stuff, these rituals. And then they have this cult buster that snaps them out, and then they hate it. And they feel crazy, they feel empty. They feel like, you know, that they lived in fantasy land, and it just makes them feel very bad. But where's the movement coming from? Because they realize that it's not enough for the Rebbe to be in a book. Has to be more tangible. How do you know that this is the source of this movement? Because every year the Rebbe started doing something else. One year it was saying a sicha. The next year he started giving out dollars. The next year he started giving out lekach. The next year he was doing this. What happened? Because I needed to be more tangible, so therefore I needed to do something more. What was good enough for last year's guys is not good enough for you because I'm one more year in the Golos, so I need to make the Rebbe one more year tangible. So how can we make the Rebbe more tangible today? Let's move his stender. Okay, that's good. It's all from the feeling of I need to feel the Rebbe real. It's not enough that he's Chai V'Kayim in a book. That's not helping my Nefesh HaBahamas. And I am sure that those people which are moving those standards, they're fighting very strongly with their Nefesh HaBahamas. They're probably doing a much better job than most of us. Because in their heads, it's tangible. The problem is that it's fake, and it doesn't last, and it's real, and it's sheker. And this is not the way to do things. But the approach to make things tangible is the right approach. Because just to say in the book that that's what it says, and physically I don't see that, doesn't help. You agree? So our goal is to make things tangible, yet real at the same time. So now we sort of zeroed in on our problem. We know what our solution should be, but now it's even harder. How do we do that? How do we make the Rebbe tangible without getting caught up in fantasy at the same time? Either he is or he's not. How is it going to work? In other words, having him in the book alive is not enough. To say that he's not alive is going to kill our kids. In other words, to write, people think that when they write titles on the Rebbe that he was a tzaddik and he was great and he is in Olam Haba and he's in the highest level of Olam Haba. Imagine a parent feels, I want you to be a chassid of the Rebbe. Why? Because your Rebbe is in the highest place in Olam Haba that ever was. It feels good that I'm following a tzaddik that's in the highest place in Olam Haba. But after a year or two, he tells himself, well, if he's in Olam Haba and I'm in Olam Haza, we have two ways to meet. Either I go up there or he comes down here. And I hope none of them happen, so therefore I'm not following him anymore. Every time your child sees the word Ziyah written on the Rebbe, that turns him off from the Rebbe. I am saying that statement open, loud, and I'm even being taped as I say that. Every person, it may be the right thing, I'm not getting into the halachic aspect of it, is the right thing to do or not. That is not even the discussion today, to discuss the halachic paskim that describe what titles to write. That I'm not going to hear to show you how pi halacha you don't have to write these titles. That is not the point of my speech today. I'm here to tell you a fact as a mechanic, as a father, and as people that I see what's going on. You write that on your Rebbe, your kids are being turned off. If not today, then tomorrow. For a while, they feel good that they're following this holy person of the past, but the moment it remains in the past, it will not push them over the edge today. It just cannot work. Because if it's something in the past, after a while, I don't want to live in the past. I don't want to live the life of a past chassid. If the Rebbe is not here for me today, I will not be for him today. When it comes to a choice, my life, either I'm going to be a shliach and dedicate my life on shliches for the Rebbe, or have a comfortable life myself, if the Rebbe is not real to you, there's a limit how long you can fight for his legacy. There's a limit how long can you dedicate your life to a legacy. If you knew him and he passed away, it's very easy to do that. Because you feel for the person, and now you want to give your life to that person. If you did not see him, and it's all about your emotional passion to the past, it will not go over to the future. I want to give you another practical example. That is, there's a book, Chutzpah, written by Alan Dershowitz. Alan Dershowitz is today known as the Jewish lawyer in America. He fights for all Jewish causes to the extent that he was the guest speaker by the International Chabad Lubavitch dinner for the Kinos HaShluchim a couple of years ago. This Alan Dershowitz fought to free Jonathan Pollard. He fought to free the Jews from Russia. All these Jewish causes that are out there in the world, he is campaigning and spearheading wars to fight for the Jews. He wrote a book called Chutzpah, and in it he describes the feelings when he got a call from his son that, Dad, I want to take you out for lunch. And he says, wow, my son doesn't do this very often. He tells him, Dad, I have good news and bad news. Good news is I'm getting married. The bad news is she's Chinese. And he says he turned white and he ran away. And it took him days to get back to himself. Him? Mr. Jewish? Mr. Dershowitz, who's Mr. Jewish? His kid's going to marry a shikta. Mele's friends, who didn't fight for Jonathan Pollard, who didn't fight for the Soviet Jewry, who didn't fight the Jewish pride, that their kids marry a shikta is easy, because they didn't grow up with Judaism. But him, he is Mr. Jewish. He is brought to speak by the Lubavitch Kinos HaShluchim Ha'olami. His kid should marry a shikta. How is that? couldn't come to terms with it. He writes in his book, until he said, I have to ask my kid. So he says, I got to bring you to dinner now. Brings his kid to, he says, listen, I'm not going to fight your marriage. You're a big boy, you know. You're out of my control, you know. I can't tell you what to do when you're 30 years old. But tell me, be honest with me, and tell me, how come, how is it that Alan Dershowitz's son is marrying a shikta? Be amazed by the answer of the son. He said, you were brought up in the Lower East Side, in Brown, wherever he was brought up. You felt for Judaism, you had Jewish friends. Judaism by you was in your heart. So even when you left the practice of Judaism, you dedicated your life for Jewish causes. It was all in the heart. I was born from you. I did not inherit the feelings of your heart. If you would have shown me Judaism real, a real Judaism, not a feelingful Judaism, maybe I would care to marry a Yid and not a Goy. Just because you fight for Jewish causes doesn't inspire me to marry Jewish. I have to be inspired. Judaism has to be real to me to stop me from marrying this beautiful, young, rich shikta. So his maskana is that we have to be more accepting of, you know, interfaith marriages and stuff like that. But the point is not what his maskana is. I disagree with a lot of what he did. But the answer of the son is 100% right. My father is a shliach that's giving his life for the Rebbe. Well, that's because he knew him, and he loved him, and he dedicated his life to him. But that Rebbe is not here for me, so I'm going to business. And the father says, I'm a shliach. I'm giving my life to the Rebbe. How come my kids are not involved? Not that there's a straight answer, because you need a lot of siyata d'shmaya when it comes to raising children. I'm not saying that this is a cause for anything. But sometimes the kid says, he was your Rebbe. Okay, you're a shliach for him. I don't know him. He doesn't do anything for me. I'm not doing anything for him. Simple. And you're going to say, chutzpah. It's not a chutzpah. Makes a lot of sense to me. I'm not going to give my life to someone who's doing nothing for me. If he's sitting in Gan Eden and I'm hovering on earth, it doesn't work. I'm not going to work hard on earth for someone that's sitting high in Gan Eden. Somebody that's here, get helping me, directing me, guiding me, giving me life. So then I owe it to him to dedicate my life to him. It's my honor to dedicate my life to him. I want to dedicate my life to him. He is here doing so much for me. How can I just sit back on my rear end on a chair and do nothing for him? So a child today needs to know, has to know, that the Rebbe is here for him today. The question only is, how do we get that message to him? Showing him siches is not helping him. Making him join the Shtender moving group is not going to help him in the long run. So what can I do as a parent to get my child involved with the Rebbe today? Ich bin nicht jedea das Elyon. I don't know heavenly courts. At least I will not say it publicly that I do. I can only say from the little experience that I have and in my own life what inspires me, what I've seen inspire others. I deal every day with children the age 14 to 18 and some older ones as well. And I see what inspires them. There is only one recipe the way I see it. And that is the special matana that the Rebbe gave us called Igros Kodesh. For me, in my experience, this is what works. And let me explain you how, what, and why. We do know that for many years, the Rebbe refused to let his Igros be printed. Because why is it anyone's business what I wrote to somebody about buying his house? It's not a Torah. Mela sikha of the Rebbe should be printed. Why? Because it's Torah. A maimer from the Rebbe is Divrei Elokim Chayim. For sure it should be printed. Even a yechidus of the Rebbe, something interesting. Personal letters, should I go to yeshiva here or there? Never writes, check your tefillin and mezuzahs, and my advice, how to deal with parents. Why should all this stuff be printed? Personal people wrote personal questions, they got personal answers. So for years, the Rebbe did not let them print it. Once in a while, in the Esophis and Igros Kodesh, they got printed, the Esophis of Lekutei Sichos, a few letters got printed. All of a sudden, in like Toshim and Bav, they asked the Rebbe to print Igros Kodesh. And the Rebbe asked the Maskir, Rabbi Shlomo Mendel Simson, Es Feran Vos Sedrukin? Is what to print? And he came back with like files of hundreds and thousands of letters. And he told them, yeah, Sifaran Vos Sedrukin. So the Rebbe said, Ibazai, yeah. But he gave him certain rules. So he asked the Rebbe, should he print it by topics or by years? In other words, it makes more sense to print it by topic. We're going to put our igris now, the Rebbe Shita on Chinuch, right? Take 10,000 letters on Chinuch. We're going to deal with Taras HaMishpacha, a whole krach called igris, right? It would make more sense to do it by topics, because years is, why do it by years? What benefit do I have to know that the letter was printed in Yud Aleph or Yud Zayin? Nothing. So they were sure that the Rebbe would say printed by topics, but they said they're going to ask anyways. And the Rebbe's answer was, Was wird sein gedruckt schneller? Whatever can be printed quicker, obviously quicker is by years. Because you have the file of all the letters were filed by years. So you just take that file and go to the printer and whatever, see which letters are allowed to be printed and printed. If you're going to have to go through by topic, it means you have to learn all the letters, divide them by topic, and that could take years of work. But once the green light was given, the Rebbe did not let them stop printing. When's the next krach? When's the next krach? Mitamo, that had to come out on a constant basis. The Rebbe, in his tremendous foresight, as a roye nemon ha'amiti, as a real Rebbe, shelo yaziv tzoyin marisoi, that will not and never let his chassidim be left alone, introduced us, gave us the print Igros Kodesh, which enables us to connect with the Rebbe today. In other words, when I write a letter to the Rebbe, and I get an answer from the Rebbe in Igros Kodesh, so now I have a Rebbe. I don't have to see him moving around 770 to prove that I have a Rebbe. He doesn't have to give me a dollar to prove that I have a Rebbe. He doesn't have to give me honey cake to prove that I have a Rebbe. I have a direct, I yesterday received an answer from the Rebbe to my problem. You don't see how it got from the Rebbe to me through the Igris? I no longer think of how it works. I know that it works. I know that the Rebbe exists. For example, medicine that works. You're sick, you take Tylenol, you no longer have a headache. You sit there and think, what's in Tylenol that makes it work? How does it work in my blood? Certain people do that. But I know that it works. I know that it works. It doesn't make me cheshbonis of if there's medicine. I know I was sick, I took this pill. I know medicine works. I don't need to understand how and what to know that it does. The classic example is the cell phone, which I always say. For generations, a phone needed a wire. For me to talk to someone, I needed to see how it connects to him. Through a wall, to electric, to his wire. If you would go to your grandfather with the little palm phones which fit in your little Bluetooth things, and tell Zeta, this is a phone! I'm going to say, no, it's not. Yes, it is. You could argue yes, you could argue no. There's only one way to prove it. Dial a number, put it into his ear and say, talk. Talk to mommy. Hey, I hear her voice on the other end. Now, I don't need to know how it works, how the signals work exactly, electricity to the phone and to... The fact that it talks back to me, I know that it works. I know that it's a phone. You're going to sit there and argue is not going to help. Prove to me that it works, and then you got yourself a phone. How it works doesn't matter. The moment somebody knows that he can get an answer from the Rebbe today, and he's gotten answers from the Rebbe today, by him is no shilas that the Rebbe left. Doesn't have to mean living in a tangible, physical way, but tangible in an accessible way. I can relate to him for my issues, so now I will help him with his mitzvahim, with his issue, so to speak. The Rebbe has a big issue. He wants to make the world a dir b'tachtonim. He wants to bring Mashiach. He's helping me out. I will now dedicate my life to what he knows and tells me is important. Just last night, we heard a Moridika story from the Rebbe that there is an 11-year-old kid in South Africa whose the parents are worried about his chinuch. And they weren't sure, should they send him across the sea to Toronto to learn? So the child with the Munab Shuta wrote a letter to the Rebbe, gets an answer in Igros Kodesh that says, an answer to you write that you finished your limudim, you want to know if you should go overseas, you should go overseas to Moistel Taras HaKodesh. A kid that gets an answer like that, what does he know about the Rebbe? If you're going to ask him where the Rebbe is exactly, he's going to be able to point, but is it a suffix by him that there is the Rebbe today? Not a suffix at all. It's no doubts. It's clear. He sees it because he sees the Rebbe affecting him today. When a child sees a tangible Rebbe, tangible, not physical, but accessible, the cell phone Rebbe, so to speak. We're in the age, I always say by Fabrengens, we're in the age of the cell phones. Why does today every kid have a cell phone? Because if he has a suffix, if the Rebbe exists today, tell him, look at your cell phone. The cell phone is a reminder to him that the Rebbe exists. The same way you have a phone that you could talk to someone without seeing a wire, how it connects, look at your cell phone and remember that there's a Rebbe. It's like tittus. That reminds you of the Eibishter, the cell phone reminds you of the Rebbe. But by making the Rebbe real accessible, will make a child give up his life and his rutzin and his tivus for the Rebbe. But how am I supposed to explain to him what happened? So then, what happened? What's this all about? What's this Chav Zayin Adar? What's this all about? What's Gimel Tammuz all about? And that we will explain, Yemirtzeh Hashem, very soon.